Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Joanna Fredericks feared that she was becoming the teacher she'd vowed never to be. She arrived at Tubman Middle School a year and a half earlier to teach science after a successful career in geographical information systems. While she'd enjoyed her previous job, she wanted to do something that would make a real difference in the lives of children. So she enrolled in a highly regarded university teaching master's program, became certified in middle school science, and took a job in the city near her home. Her colleagues at Tubman Middle School considered her a smart, energetic, and passionate teacher. But her new job was turning out to be much harder than she'd ever expected. Her school district, one of the largest, most diverse, and poorest in the state, had adopted a textbook that covered far too many topics. The resulting curriculum was, as many of the national reports on science have observed, a mile wide and an inch deep. There was simply no way for her to cover all the lessons, vocabulary, and experiments described in the book in enough depth that the students would really understand the concepts being presented. As the year went on, her students became increasingly disrespectful to each other. Part of the problem, she knew, was that they were bored, but she just didn't know how to make their lessons more interesting while still following the curriculum. The more she asked her students to sit quietly and do their worksheets, the more they acted out. Well into her second year, Ms. Fredericks felt her worst nightmare was coming true. She was becoming one of those science teachers, one of those teachers who taught her students only two things: that they didn't like science and that they weren't any good at it. Science has become a cornerstone of 21st century education. It's also a powerful enterprise that can improve people's lives in fundamental ways. Teams of scientists participate in developing treatments for diseases, technologies for distributing clean water in arid environments, building systems for enhancing national security, and building computer models that help track the impact of human behavior on the environment. Creating scientific productivity requires a workforce, not only of scientists, engineers, medical and healthcare professionals, but also of journalists, teachers, policymakers, and the broader network of people who make critical contributions to science and the scientific enterprise. Because science is a critical factor in maintaining and improving the quality of life, it's imperative that we teach science well to all children. Science is important for another, often overlooked reason. To the degree that we actually know science, we have knowledge and strategies with which to examine evidence systematically, interpret and control our surroundings. Knowledge of science can help us to think critically and frame productive questions. Without scientific knowledge, we are wholly dependent on others as experts. With scientific knowledge, we are empowered to become participants rather than merely observers. Science, in this sense, is more than a means for getting ahead in the world of work. It's a resource for becoming a critical and engaged citizen in a democracy. Over the past few decades, historians, philosophers of science, and sociologists have taken a much closer look at what scientists actually do, with often surprising results. In the conventional view, the lone scientist, usually male and usually white, struggles heroically with nature in order to understand the natural world. Sometimes scientists are seen as applying a scientific method to get their results. They're perceived as removed from the real world, operating in an airy realm of abstraction. Studies of what scientists actually do belie these stereotypes. Indeed, there's no single scientific method universally employed by all. Scientists use a wide array of methods to develop hypotheses, models, and formal and informal theories. They also use different methods to assess the fruitfulness of their theories and to refine their models, explanations, and theories. Studies also show that science is fundamentally a social enterprise conducted by large groups over widespread networks. Scientists talk frequently with their colleagues, both informally and formally, and an increasing number of women and minorities are scientists, although still not enough to match their representation in the general population. Although different domains of science rely on different processes to develop scientific theories, all domains of science share certain features. Data and evidence hold a primary position in deciding any issue. When well-established data, from experiments or observations, conflict with a hypothesis or theory, that idea must be modified or abandoned, and other explanations must be sought that can incorporate or take account of the new evidence. Theories, models, and hypotheses are rooted in empirical evidence and therefore can be tested and revised or expand it if necessary. The way that scientists operate in the real world is remarkably similar to how students operate in effective science classrooms, classrooms in which educators strive to structure student scientific practice so that it resembles that of scientists. In these classrooms, students engage in a process of logical reasoning about evidence. They work cooperatively to explore ideas. They use mathematical or mechanical models, develop representations of phenomena, and work with various technological and intellectual tools. Students participate in active and rigorous discussion of predictions, of evidence, of explanations, and of the relationships between hypotheses and data. They examine, review, and evaluate their own knowledge. Just as studies have revealed a radically different picture of what scientists do, they've also revealed a radically different picture of what young children are capable of doing. Cognitive researchers have become much more sophisticated in probing children's capabilities. In the process, they've uncovered much richer stories of knowledge and reasoning skills than they ever expected to find in young children. This is a marked departure from previously accepted ways of looking at children's capabilities or knowledge. Studies show that even children in kindergarten have surprisingly sophisticated ways of thinking about the natural world based on direct experiences with the physical environment, such as watching objects fall or collide, and observing animals and plants. Children apply their understanding when they try to describe their experiences or persuade other people about what's right or what's wrong. In trying to understand and influence the world around them, they develop ideas about how the world works and their role in it. The capacity of very young children to reason scientifically is also much greater than has been previously assumed. Children from all backgrounds and all socioeconomic levels show evidence of sophisticated reasoning skills. Although they may lack knowledge and experience, they can and do engage in a wide range of subtle and complex reasoning processes. These processes can form the underpinnings of scientific thinking. Laying a foundation through work on measurement in kindergarten and first grade will have important payoffs in later grades when students are able to reason about measuring and use the results of measurements in more sophisticated ways. Of course, students can't behave exactly like scientists. They don't yet know enough and they haven't had enough experience with the practices of science. But students who understand science as a process of building theories from evidence develop many of the same skills and practices that scientists demonstrate. They can be taught to apply their existing knowledge to new problems or in new or different contexts. They can make connections between different representations of a concept. They can ask themselves why they believe something and how certain they are in their beliefs. They can become aware that their ideas change over time as they confront new evidence or use new tools or models to examine data. They can learn how to ask fruitful and researchable questions, how to challenge a claim, and where to go to learn more. The science teaching and learning taking place in American classrooms today could and should do much more. Students should be able to build on the knowledge they bring to the classroom, pose good questions, find ways to explore those questions, investigate and evaluate alternative models, and argue their points of view. With an increasingly diverse student population and persistent gaps in scientific achievement, the goal of scientific proficiency for all students may seem difficult to achieve. It's important to remember that young children come to school with a strong foundation of basic reasoning skills, knowledge of the natural world, and innate curiosity. In order to tap into these skills, teachers need to be sensitive to their students' shared strengths as well as the ways in which each student is different. Teachers need to be willing and able to acquire or deepen their scientific knowledge, and they need to be supported to take calculated risks in embracing instructional approaches that have been shown to benefit all students. This is possible when teachers act on the premise that regardless of previous experience, existing knowledge, and cultural and linguistic differences, each and every one of their students is capable of learning science. Much work still needs to be done to identify the best ways to bring about this kind of science instruction. But enough is known now to begin moving forward in the right direction. Research has shown us how much students can achieve in effective science learning environments. It has shown us what science education can and should be and where it needs to go. So as the National Research Council recommends, let's get going. Ready, set, science. For more information on either Taking Science to School or Ready, Set, Science, you may contact the Center for Education at the National Research Council. Their phone number is 202-334-2353. You may also read the full text of both these books online at the National Academies Press. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.